Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together. Hey folks, welcome to another episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I'm Ben Sternke, and I am here in my home in Indianapolis. And today we've got Ben Hardman in Atlanta.
Yes, guys. How you doing? I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
In my church office.
The church office.
I'm not in my home. I'm in the church office.
The brick cubicle.
It's very exciting.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Guys, today on the podcast, we've got a guest that we're interviewing. His name is Jeff Hancock, and he works with International Justice Mission. Jeff, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Thanks, guys. It's great to be here.
Jeff, why don't you give us a little rundown of what you do? What is International Justice Mission? What's your role in it? What's that all about?
Absolutely. Well, just to kind of as a starting place, I've been a pastor for, I guess it's coming up on 20 years. It's getting close to that.
Wow.
And was a pastor outside of Boston for a while and then in North Carolina. And then for about 6 years at an international church in the Netherlands in The Hague. And through that time, I guess God just kept stirring my heart for justice. And then I got connected through a book by IJM's founder, Gary Haugen, called The Good News About Injustice, which is incredible. And I felt like it kind of gave me the language I'd been looking for a while and just hadn't quite been able to grab. And so for the last, say, 10 years of my pastorate, within the church, it was really trying to explore these ideas of justice and then specifically kind of trying to partner with IJM. IJM is an organization that is international in its work. So we're in about 18 field offices around the world. And the heart of what we're really trying to do is to protect the poor from violence. And so in all of the communities where we work, there's a type of casework that we're leaning into trying to protect the poor from violence, not only in the sense of rescuing victims of injustice and of violence, but also in really working to change the system on the ground. So everything we do is in partnership with the local authorities because our end goal is that that system on the ground, that justice system there, is actually providing the protection for the vulnerable communities as it was intended to. And we're probably best known in terms of the work we do for our work with human trafficking and trying to end modern day slavery. Yeah. So that's really kind of the heart behind what we do.
Great.
That's great. And Jeff's here in Atlanta also?
Yeah. So I'm based out of Atlanta. IJM is headquarters in DC. My team as part of the church mobilization team is really kind of spread around the country and, you know, I think our mission is, as a team, is really twofold. One is we are trying to fuel the mission. We're trying to fuel the field and give the field what they need to actually do this work. The other side of it is that we really get to stand alongside partner churches in helping to continue the process of awakening to God's heart for justice.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff, for sharing all that. You know, a while back we did a series on women and men leading together in the church, and for us that's not just a theological quibble. It's not just here's a hermeneutical thing that we believe that we'd like to tell everybody about. But for us that had to do with justice as well, because there's in our current cultural moment, there's all kinds of things happening with the Me Too movement, different things like that, where we're realizing there's more at stake here than just how you read the Bible and interpret it, that this is a justice issue, that in this case, for men and women, that men have held power and women have not. in general. And that's created this power differential, this status differential that's been baked into a system that creates the possibility for abuse and exploitation, manipulation, all kinds of other stuff. And so the interesting thing to me about what you're saying about your work is that you're not just out there providing relief for the poor. You're not just giving food to the poor. You're not just trying to protect the poor from the violence that they're currently kind of subjected to. But you're actually trying to go a step deeper and say, okay, what's the system, this justice system, this systemic issue that's in place here that creates the conditions where the poor are taken advantage of and violence, they are subject to violence. Can you talk a little bit about I don't know, the differentiation between those two things and maybe some of the challenges you encounter as you try to make those differentiations? I don't know if people critique you for that or criticize you for that. I'm just curious about how that goes for you.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And when you look at really the mission of IJM, what we try to do, as I think I mentioned it earlier, but everything we do is in partnership with local authorities. Mm. And so the heart of that, I mean, one is it's an authority issue. I mean, we are going into areas and we're trying to help empower that system to enforce its own law. Mm. The other side of it, though, is that we want a local solution to a local problem, in a sense. So even in our field offices, and actually everywhere we are around the world, 95% of our staff is national to that office. And that flows out of that same desire that this is not a Western sense of justice that's being imposed on an area. Mm. It's actually trying to work within the existing system, the existing laws, to build will and capacity to actually enforce those laws. Mm. So I mentioned this, but everywhere we are, we want to do four things. First, we want to rescue victims, and then we want to restore survivors. And honestly, if that's all we did, I'm in. That's enough. Mm-hmm. But that's also an endless process. And so what we seek to do on the side of system transformation is the first thing is we want to bring perpetrators to justice. What we find again and again is that impunity that you mentioned of a perpetrator, of a violent offender, that is the biggest issue. And so when we mm-hmm. can end that impunity, when we can end the lack of accountability, the crimes actually just the frequency of them drop off the cliff, and then wow. by working within the justice system itself, one, I think we get to understand the issues that we're working into, the kinds of violence, in a very intimate way. The other thing is that we actually get to see from within the system, what are the roadblocks here? Is it corruption? Is it simply a lack of capacity? Is it a lack of knowledge of the law? And so from within the system, then we actually get to identify the weak places and actually help to shore them up. Because at the end of the day, what we want is that sort of pipeline of public justice, of police and social care and judges and prosecutors to all be enabled and empowered to actually do the work. Because, as you say, our real desire is that no one's victimized in the first place.
Right.
Our win in an area is that we actually get to leave because the issue that we were working on is now being effectively handled by the system on the ground. I think for me, that's one of the things that drew me to the work of IJM was this idea. It's very different, at least in terms of how I understood charity. So I think if I thought about charity, if you had asked me years ago about what charity was, to be honest, there was within me this notion of strength to weakness. It was a downhill motion. And mm-hmm. so charity was about relieving symptoms. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's a noble pursuit. Mm-hmm. I also, though, think that it is a very human pursuit. And what I mean by that is that there is an end built within that. There's a finiteness to that. I mean, we talk all the time about the reality of giving fatigue and charity fatigue. my attention span is like, you know, a 7-year-old boy. And so I'm constantly drawn to the next crisis. And I think that when my mentality and when we as the church, our mentality is about charity, that downhill motion instead of justice, I think that's where the problem is, because I think that justice is not a downhill motion. It is like to like. It is brother to brother, sister to sister. It's really sourced out of the idea, not that they have a need and I can fix it, but that that person is the image of God. And so I'm going to move in that direction. And that notion then of system change then becomes not about alleviating symptoms. Instead, it really becomes this idea that we as the church actually get to live in the direction of the kingdom of God. And so the system that we want is the kingdom system, where everybody is treated as the image of God, that justice is just part of the normal life of us together. And so then it becomes a question of leveraging our power to enhance the lives of others, our brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I love that. And it coheres and kind of integrates really well with like a major feature of our coaching that we do for leaders in Gravity Leadership Academy, is kind of taking them out of that, the posture, down the hill posture that you were talking about, where it's like, hey, I've got power, I've got the right answers, here you go, you're welcome. Right. And we're taking,
to me for the answers.
Right. Yeah. I'm the Bible answer guy, or I'm the, you know, everything answer guy. And here I am leading a church. Let me help you. I'm trying to transform that posture into one that speaks a little bit more to what you're talking about, where there's mutuality. There's a receiving of the image of God in the other. That I'm not here with answers. I'm here with questions. Oftentimes I'm here to listen. Right. I'm here to learn. I really can't help unless I can do those things. And so I appreciate that, kind of hearing about that posture that lines up really well with the posture that we try to train leaders in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I, as you're talking, Jeff, I wonder, it feels like in our culture right now, there's this kind of outrage culture where every week there's a getting riled up about something. Right. But I don't really see that producing a lot of fruit. And right. So I see social media outrage. I see like there's another justice issue every week that somebody's excited about. Right. How do you move from outrage isn't a fruit of the spirit? and how do we move people from just getting like fired up about something to kind of long obedience in the same direction, to sustain systematic change?
Right.
To really acting out of love and not out of outrage or out of sometimes even fear, guilt, or shame.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great question. I think a part of it, I can speak partly of my own journey as a pastor and obviously as a human being, but how that then expressed itself as a pastor and then in seeking to lead the churches I was a part of. The starting place for us is really trying to understand what injustice is to begin with, because I think you're right. I think that that is a word, justice and injustice, that frankly have been hijacked in our culture. It's been stolen really from the vocabulary of the church, and we've been told it means something that I'm not convinced that it does. So internally within IJM, the way that we understand the sin of injustice in the Bible is that it is always about power. It's the abuse of power to take from someone else the good things God intends for them. So when I as an individual, when we as a group, or when a system uses its power to take from others the good things God intends for them, their life, their liberty, their dignity, the fruits of their love and labor, that is injustice. And we see that throughout the Bible. You know, if you think about probably one of the most famous stories in the Bible of David and Bathsheba, and you think about that story, and you think of all of the things we would name as the sins of David. When Nathan the prophet comes and confronts David, he doesn't name any of those. The only thing he goes after is David's abuse of power, how he used his power to rob from these people who were more vulnerable than him. The good things that God had actually intended for them. So that's the beginning place. And I think that one of the places that we have to start as the church is really sitting in that, because that is not a comfortable place.
Yeah.
I think it's not comfortable for us to ask as a group. It certainly isn't comfortable to this moment for me to ask about myself. How am I using my power to actually take from others? And so it starts there in this sort of shattering moment, I think, where we recognize, what is that violent injustice? What does that injustice look like around the world? And so we see things like the fact that, you know, slavery isn't an issue for the history books. There's best estimates are there's 40 million slaves today on our watch. One of the things you mentioned, the injustice within the male and female relationships. One of the things that we're working into, and for me was just a shattering reality, is that gender-based violence accounts for more death and injury amongst women than cancer, war, malaria, and motor accidents combined.
Wow.
We as the church, we need to sit there for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And allow some brokenness to come.
Yes.
I think that when we do that, the immensity of that brokenness, hopefully the first thing it does is it actually drives us then to God to say, repentance. Also, I think it's to say, well, what could be different then? And so one of the real disciplines for us at IJM is our own spiritual formation. Our work in the field is really driven by our vision of discipleship. Now, I understand that prayer, discipleship, spiritual formation, that is in the mission statement and values of every Christian organization in the history of the world, right? You know, it's a core value of every church I was a part of. I will say this, I have never been part of an organization where that is taken more seriously than at IJM. And the reason is because we sit in front of the reality of violence and injustice, and we realize, well, that's a God-sized problem.
Yeah.
And yet, God's really clear that he puts the solution to that in our lap. As he always does, he says, oh, I'm going to fix this. You go do it. And so seeing that, we're really drawn to this place of prayer. So, you know, within our rhythm of a day, for instance, every IJM employees around the world, our day starts as a part of the workday with a half hour of silence, where we are really just sitting in front of God. We're being reminded that this is his work and his vision. And I think I mentioned before, but if charity has an end because it's our own vision, I think justice does not, because it's actually trying to live towards God's vision. And so we start the workday, and then 2 hours later, we stop it again, and we gather back for corporate prayer. So every office around the world, every day, we stop, and we just tell the stories. We tell the stories of the celebrations as well as the lament, and then we lean into prayer. And so that notion of trying to bring the reality of injustice and the brokenness to God and be captured once again by his vision of things gives this the energy it needs. The other thing that I would say is that if we need to sit in that place of what injustice is, one of the things that transformed me as a human and I think as a preacher was just turning that on its head to say, well, if that's the reality of injustice, the abuse of power, then what is the reality of justice? What is the work of justice? Well, it is the use of power to cause to flourish within others the good thing God intends for them. Well, all of a sudden, that had an application everywhere. Now, justice was not just, okay, guys, it's justice weekend. This is when we're talking about this.
Right.
Now, I still remember, actually, I was preaching through a series on Ephesians, and I was in a section where Paul's talking about relationships in the family. And so it's basically this idea of what does grace look like in the family? And that idea of justice came in. how am I in my own home using my power to cause the good things God intends for my family to flourish? Because we all have power.
Yes.
As spouses, as children, as parents, as consumers, as church members, as citizens, as people who hold the resources that we do, we all have power, even though we don't always feel like that. And so then the question becomes, and I think that one of the things that sustains the work of the church, and what Gary Haugen, our founder, he actually calls it the long and boring work of justice. Mm-hmm. Because for every dramatic moment of celebration of you know, being able to facilitate a rescue from a brothel of 12-year-old girls, honestly, there's 100 days of just the relentless showing up. Mm-hmm. We just keep showing up because this vision of God's world is so worth it.
It's great stuff.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, Jeff, I want to ask you a question about how your work is received, because I can imagine some pastors and leaders listening to this and maybe being stirred by it, feeling like this is, yes, I want to get involved in this, but also then seeing other visions of, you know, maybe certain members of their congregation opposed to it, right? So sure. I'm thinking of like Helder Camara, you know, who ministered, I think, in Latin America, basically mm-hmm. said, like, when I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why they are poor, they call me a communist. You know, so there's this contrast, this dichotomy between these two things. And, you know, there was recently a statement put out, right? The statement on social justice in the gospel.
Yes.
I can't remember if that's the name of it or not. But how, like, so I guess my question is this, like, do you guys ever deal with those kinds of criticisms? Like, do you give it the time of day or, you know, you just get on with your work? And do you have any advice or anything that you could say to a pastor who wants to sort of raise the awareness of injustice and mobilize his congregation or her congregation toward these things, but is afraid or is unsure of, like, how's this going to land with people? And what do I say to the people who, you know, are going to be opposed to this or think I'm not preaching the gospel anymore? I don't know. Have you anything to say to them?
So much. And that is a frequent pushback. And I would say that it comes from a few places. I think one is there are times when it comes from a very real and earnest, though I think maybe slightly off focus sort of view of what evangelism is, right, of what the role of the church is. And so sometimes it is earnest. I think other times it's really an excuse not to engage. I mean, I know I've done that plenty of times, maybe not specifically on this issue, but 100 others. And so I think sometimes we can cloak our reluctance to really join in a work we see in front of us that's actually clearly God. Mm-hmm. We can cloak that in theological debate.
Right.
And so one of the things that we try to do is just sense, well, what is this particular pushback feel like? And is it really an interest in having a discussion, which I am all in, and right, we'll engage in that. I think so here's a few things I would say to that. One is, if you think about Jesus in Luke 4, so he has this moment in the temple where he is going to reveal finally, this is who I really am publicly. He is going to establish once for all what the mission of God in the flesh is in this world. Mm-hmm. And so he gets up and he unveils the scroll or unrolls the scroll from Isaiah. And he says, I've come to bring good news for the poor, release for the captive, freedom for the oppressed. My entire life, including much of my preaching life, I have heard and preached that passage as metaphor. And so Jesus wants to free me from the oppression of my guilt. He wants to free me from the oppression of my shame or the bondage of addiction. And all of those things are true. And man, that is good news. Right. It's why we're here today.
Sure.
But if we stop there, mm-hmm, I think we miss the fact that the good news is even better than we ever imagined.
Come on.
Jesus actually meant that. Yeah. And moreover, when he stands with all authority under his fingertips and says, okay, guys, now my mission is yours, then he passes on the entire scope of that redemptive mission of God to us. And so I think the heart of my sort of response is, guys, the good news is even better than you thought. Mm-hmm. How extraordinary is that? Far from diminishing the gospel, we're actually trying to unveil the utter grandeur of the message and ministry of Jesus. Mm. God came to transform the world and to get to be a part of that. And so that really is the heart of that. I think I can show you examples of people who we have been able to facilitate the rescue of. And, you know, when we're pulling a little boy out of a brick kiln in India, yes, we're not handing him a tract and saying, hey, here's the four spiritual laws of the gospel.
Right.
What we're trying to do is actually just live out the mission of Jesus.
Right.
And so I can think of a young boy named Kumar. We were able to identify him and facilitate his rescue from a brick kiln in India. He came out and began to experience just loving aftercare. And so every, you know, that's the restoration piece of what we do, is that obviously when they're pulled out of a traumatic place, it's not like their life is now okay. Mm-hmm. It really begins a long season of aftercare, years. And so we really just walked through life with Kumar. We were able to, you know, get him into school and sort of help him start to dream and hope like a human being. And from that journey, he actually became a Christian, mm-hmm. because he watched this living out of the gospel. And I will tell you that if Kumar were here, he would tell you that Luke 4 is not a metaphor. Mm-hmm. His oppression was ended because the friends of God walked into the place of darkness, mm-hmm. and walked him out, mm-hmm. because that's what God's friends do.
Yeah.
And so I just, again, I think that so much of this discussion has been hijacked from us. And I think so many times, if you control the vocabulary of the discussion, you control the perception of that. And so I think a part of what I really long for and I think get excited about in my role is really trying to help the church reclaim our role. Because the reality is our witness as a church is really about this presenting to our world a grander vision of what God actually intends for human life.
Yes.
And, you know, if I think about our culture today, it's filled with so much fear and so much defensiveness. And I honestly believe that a part of that is because no one is offered a vision of a better world. And I mean, if I think about what was my vision as a pastor for my church, honestly, so many times it was that the church would grow and maybe I'd have a more effective small group ministry and get people to actually sign up and, you know, or maybe it was a world with more Christians in it. And all of those things are lovely, but that's not actually a vision of a better world. Jesus actually gave us that vision. Mm-hmm. And the church now gets to actually live into that and to present to our world a vision of what could be.
Yes.
And so, again, I think it's far from either diminishing the gospel or diminishing the role of the church. It's actually saying, oh, man, let's live into it. And last thing on that, and then I'll close my mouth for a second. But when you think about this is one of my favorite passages, but where Jesus describes his church and he says, now this is my church and the gates of hell will never prevail against it. Once again, the way I've heard that preached and the way I preached it myself for so many years is that no matter what happens to us, somehow the church can withstand the onslaught of the world.
Yeah.
And so we see that passage as presenting this sort of defensive posture of the church. It's a castle behind the walls, and somehow we will survive. Now, there may be other passages that talk about things like that. That's not what that passage is about. An army comes into contact with the gates of the enemy when it is attacking, not when it's defending. Jesus is not painting a picture there of a church that can somehow withstand the onslaught of a world that is evil. He's actually painting a picture of an evil that cannot withstand the onslaught of a loving church. That is the vision I want us to be living into. That's a much more exciting vision.
That's beautiful. It's beautiful. I don't know that there is a more important issue for us to be talking about in the church right now than what we do with our power.
Yes.
And what we've seen with lots of leaders falling, with I think race relations, with women in ministry and women in leadership. And even what you're describing, where we take on a posture with our church where the most important thing is that we grow our own church, then what we're doing with our power is self-serving, and it's not serving the greater good of the community or the neighborhood that we're in or the larger world or engaging in some of these issues. So I thank you so much. This has been so, so good. You and I are going to talk after this is over to figure out how Grace Marietta gets more involved. We've been putting that meeting off, but I want to have that meeting to figure out how our church gets engaged with what you're doing.
Yeah.
How do other pastors connect to what you're doing, and how do they engage in the mission that you guys are leaning into?
Absolutely. I think the place that we always start is we want to start with engagement. And so the biggest thing that we want to do to start a journey of walking together with a local church is really just engaging around the issue of God's heart for justice. And so one of the main functions of my team is we go around and we get to preach about God's heart for justice, and we teach Sunday schools and we do conferences and really want your church to be stirred up. We always say that we want to create good pastoral problems for you guys. The bad ones are going to come on their own, but we want to be a part of helping to stir your people up for this part of God's heart that's so rich and so fruitful for us, too, when we join them there. And so that really is the place we want to start. There's also a ton of resources that we've been able to come up with over the years that are everything from books and Bible studies. And you asked earlier about how a suggestion for pastors trying to dig into this. I would say that really coming in and connecting with some of the resources that we have that really dive into the Bible's claim and call to justice, that's really what we want our people to be wrestling with. And then I think that as we engage together, if there is this overlap of passion and desire with the mission of IJM and that church, then we really can start to talk about partnership and what would it look like to partner maybe with one specific field office? Because I will say this, all of the issues that you mentioned a minute ago are very much issues of power and justice. They are also, they're difficult sometimes for us to dive into as a community. And I think that one of the things that I've found is that engaging with IJM and say our work in Ghana, right? So in Ghana, we're freeing little boys from slavery from the fishing industry. There is no one sitting in our church today who's going to look at that and say, oh, I don't really care about that, or that's not something that should be fixed. And so in a way, engaging in God's heart for justice and the reality of injustice there and the type of work we're doing actually helps us to almost in a safer way start to really dive into God's heart there. So engagement is the key. And you know, if you're interested in this, one of the things I would suggest is just go to www.ijm.org and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page and click the page for churches. Send us your information. You're not signing a contract by doing that. It really is just the start of a conversation. My colleagues on the church mobilization team are spread around the country. We also have ways of just engaging a large number of churches. We've started a thing called Freedom Sunday, where it's really just inviting churches to spend one Sunday dedicated to the reality of slavery and the invitation of God to end it. There are resources to accomplish that on your own or by bringing in an IJM speaker. So really, that's it. Engage with us, start the conversation, and let's see where it goes.
Yeah. And we'll put a lot of that information in the show notes so people can track
for sure
that you're wanting to get more information. Jeff, this has been really, really great. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, guys. Thanks.
We so appreciate the work that you're doing and are so proud to call you a friend, man. This is great.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Folks, we'll see you next time. This has been another episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Peace. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you found it helpful, please let us know by leaving a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you do that kind of thing. And you can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com to ask a question or suggest a topic for a future episode. And join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful during the week. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And FYI, my brother, Aaron Sternke, mixes and masters this podcast. And he does this kind of thing, mixing, engineering, production, and scoring for other people. And he's really good at what he does. If you want to check out his work and request a quote, you can check him out at aaronsternke.com. That's A-A-R-O-N-S-T-E-R-N-K-E.com. We'll see you next time. Bye.